Wednesday, the 8th of January, Yud Aleph Teves, morning after the big Siyum. Rabbi Eli Pick, what happened to the 9th of Teves?
The question isn't really what happened to the 9th of Teves, but what happened on the 9th of Teves. And there is a bit of a perplexing question put about it in the Poskim. We're going to see if we can sort this out. So what did happen on the 9th of Teves? The 9th of Teves was 2 days ago, 6th of January.
Yeah.
Well, what happened then? Well, President Trump announced that there'll be no nuclear bomb in Iran. But what happened originally on the 9th of Teves? Maybe it's your mother-in-law's birthday or something like that. But the question is what does the Shulchan Aruch mean when it talks about it? And not only the Shulchan Aruch, but preceding the Shulchan Aruch, there was the Torah and others who write that there were 3 days of Tzora, when it became the practice to fast. The 8th of Teves, the 9th of Teves, and the 10th of Teves. Now, as we all know, the 10th of Teves was yesterday, and we fast because of the siege of Yerushalayim, which took place prior to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So that was a sad day. What happened on the 8th of Teves? So we're told quite openly, Shulchan Aruch, Narachayim, Simon Tov, Kuf Pei, Sif Beis, brings from the Torah, B'shmona B'Teves, on the 8th, Nichtavah HaTorah Yevonis. The Torah was written for the first time in Greek, known as the Septuagint, which may have been an amazing feat because there were different rabbis who all wrote the same thing, even though they were locked away from each other, but it was regarded as a sad time for Klal Yisrael because the translation of the Torah into Greek was regarded as a diminution of standards and so on. So that was being made Ptolemy HaMelech, King Ptolemy, Voyachoshech Elom Gimel Yomim, and for 3 days there was darkness in the world as a result of this Septuagint. But Tisha B'Av, but what happened on the 9th? Lo Noda, Ezehi HaTzorah. Lo Noda doesn't mean Lo Yodua, it doesn't mean it was not known. Lo Noda means we were not told, from Lo Dia, which means that the rabbis knew that there was some special reason why we should fast on the 9th of Teves, but they would not tell us the reason. Lo Noda Ezehi HaTzorah She'irabo. We're not told, so we're left perplexed. And yet, although we don't get told the reason, loads of poskim bring it up as something which is to be marked on the calendar. All right, says the Magen Avraham, not everybody fasts on these days. And he brings from Megillas Tanis, Nisakna b'mei Chochmei HaTalmud, quotes the Ramban, Lochein kol ba'al nefesh yachmeh la'atzma, that everybody who is machmeh should take it upon himself stringently, imaf shalo, to fast on all these 3 days. But we don't know what happened. The Torah, the Bahad says, we don't know what happened. The Ochos Chaim says, they did not write what happened. It remains a secret. Yesterday in the Slichas, there was a comment about Ezra HaSofer. Ezra HaSofer was Nifta on the 9th of Teves. But the question is, what's the big deal in hiding the fact that Ezra HaSofer was Nifter on the 9th of Teves? Why didn't we say so? Why cover it up? So there must be something more sinister to it than just Ezra HaSofer. Says the Taz, Tema Gedola, this is an astonishing question. Or Esau B'Slichus, as you just pointed out, in the Slichus of Asor B'Teves, the Tisha B'Omes Ezra HaSofer. So what's the big deal? We know what happened on the 9th. Ezra HaSofer was Nifter. But Tzorich Iyun Rav. And this requires a lot of research, because why was it covered up? And Ha'oros on the Torah, it quotes from the Megillas Tanis, Defus Vilna, Kosov Devetisha on the Teves, Nolad Oso Ho'ish. That man was born, to use the literal translation. Or maybe Cheshbon Ledvarov. So let's have a look at the Megillas Tanis. And there, Megillas Tanis goes back a very long way, and there it says, Bolo Kosim Rabbeinu Alma, our rabbis did not tell us the reason for fasting on the 9th. V'shamati b'shem Godol Echod, says the Tosfos Chadoshim, De'oz Nolad Osei Ho'ish. That man was born. And then at the footnote, there's a whole cheshbon with dates on the Molad about Tekufas Teves. We won't get bogged down into that, to show that this was the 25th of December. And as we all know, Pope Gregory took 11 days out of the calendar, so the Greek Orthodox Church and the Russian Orthodox Church celebrate their Christian festival on the 6th of January. And indeed, this year, the 6th of January, 2 days ago, was exactly on the 9th of Teves. So why is it that they kept it a secret? Because the rabbis knew that the censors will just cross it out. If the censors see what's been going on, that we made this fast because of the birth of Yeshu, Rosh Teves, Yuach, Shavuot, Zichrono, then they will just eliminate it. So what did they do? They just said, the 9th is a Tanis, but we're not telling you the reason. And that way, they managed to get it past the censors.
Why do we do Yud Teves?
I beg your pardon?
Why do we do Yud Teves, not Teth Teves?
Well, it's a different day, the 10th. The calculation was that it was for the 9th. So the Nisei Gavriel writes that we have this minhag on the night of the Christian festival called Nittel, of not learning, and Nittel, he says, is Nun Yud Tes Lamed, which stands for Nolad Yeshu Tes Leteves. Once my father, 25 years ago, came into the Sadi Ger Shtib, and he was waiting for Shir to start, and nothing was happening. So he asked the Rov of the Shul, who's now the Rebbe Shlita, and he said, no Shir tonight? And the Rov said, Nittel, 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 we don't want to help the Neshama of Osayish. So my father, Zichrono Levracha, said to him, that's all very well, but since Pope Gregory took 11 days out of the calendar, the true date is not really the 25th of December, it's the 6th of January. So the Rav said, okay, we'll stop learning then as well. So it's difficult to describe the extent of how much censors from the Christian faith try to interfere with us, that they would cross things out, change things, and introduce lots of falsehoods. Interestingly, in Parshas Devarim in Re'eh, the most important posik, perhaps, which you can give to any Christian missionary is Ki Yokum Bekirbecho, Novi Ocholein. If somebody comes amongst you, somebody who professes to be a Novi, or he has a dream, a Cholein Cholein V'nasan, and even does signs and wonders for you, lo sishma el divrei hanovi hahu. You may not listen to him. Because Hashem is testing you. That is perhaps the best classic pasuk against any of the missionaries who start on us. And interestingly, if you look at the uncensored versions of the Baal HaTurim for Bekir Bechon Novi, he says that's the gematria of Zu Ha'isha Uveno. This is the woman and her son. You'll find it very rarely, but it's in the uncensored versions. Some modern versions have Zu Ha'isha, which doesn't really make sense at all. Zu Ha'isha. It misses out the word Uveno. So some censored with Uveno, and the censor must have been very clever with gematrias, because Zu Ha'isha is the gematria of Bekir Becha, but Bekir Becha Novi is Zu Ha'isha Uveno. Anyway, that's one example of censorship. There's a very important piece I came across in the Chasam Sofer, which shows the degree of Christian censorship. The Sefer HaKuzari, a classic work of Yehuda Halevi, teaches us about Emunah. And the king of the Khuzars went around the world trying to find out what the truth is. So he questions the philosopher, he questions the Muslim, and he questions the Christian. And when he realizes there's nobody left, reluctantly he comes to the Jews. So he asks the Christian various questions. But if you look at the text we have nowadays, it's very short indeed where it talks about the Christian. And the Chasam Sofer writes in Parshas Vo'eiro on the Pasuk, Heim b'nei Yisrael lo shamu elai ve'eichi shemeini paro. So the Jewish people, they don't listen to me. So kal v'chomer, the paro won't listen to me. So there the Chasam Sofer explains this Pasuk by means of a kuzari, and he says this is only in a censored version, which I have from Amsterdam, he says. I did once try to find this old Amsterdam edition in the Bodleian Library in Oxford, but they don't have it. What does the Chasam Sofer write from the Kuzari? He asks the Christian, what was the purpose of your leader, of Yeshu. He says he came to save the world. He came to improve people and that they follow in the ways of God. So the Khazari says to the Christian, did he succeed in his mission? So the Christian says, well, not really, but those he did not succeed with are peoples of sinners. They are evildoers. So the Khazari says, hold on a minute, you are saying that he's a messenger of God. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what will happen in the future, so he knows whether his messengers will succeed in their mission. And when we go through the Torah, we go through Tanakh, everybody who was given a mission by HaKadosh Baruch Hu went ahead and did it and succeeded. Even Yonah, who ran away, in the end, went to Nineveh to fulfill his mission. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu will only ask somebody to do a mission if he knows they will succeed. Hashem knows what will happen in the future. And you say he didn't succeed, therefore he kicks out the Christian. A fundamental part of the Khazari on the subject of Emunah, which is sadly deleted from our texts. And if you look at some of their texts, you know the Christians proudly claim that they carry forward from the people of Israel their Bible. And then the chutzpah is that they plagiarize it and they change it. And then they replace what they call the old with the new. I mean, nowadays it would be called fraudulent misrepresentation. But what do they do? Have a look at their Ten Commandments, Aseret HaDibros. The Catholic Ten Commandments. If you look at them very closely, you will realize that the second one they miss out. You may not bow down to any graven image. They conveniently omit it because it doesn't suit their narrative. That's what they want to do. Ah, the problem these Catholics have is that there's only nine left. What do? They want to call it Ten Commandments. So if you look closely at the last one, Lo Sachmod, which we treat as one of the Dibros, they divide it up into two in order to make up their number of ten. That's how they like to change things. And I'll just go through a few examples in Tanakh of how they have deliberately changed the narrative in order to suit their own agenda. In a rather devious way, and it just displays how they don't understand the Hebrew language, or they think that we don't understand the Hebrew language. Fortunately, a lot of us have been to Hasmonean school where we were taught Hebrew grammar, and so very simple principles of Hebrew grammar come up here. If you want to know whether a Bible you pick up is a Christian Bible or a Jewish one, because it's written in English, all you need to do is turn straight to Tehillim Beis, the second perek of Tehillim, and there, in Pasuk Yud Beis, comes the phrase, Nashku Var, which means yearn for purity. Var, like we say in the Pasuk, Neki Chapayim Uvar Levov, purity of the heart. Or we say the word Barur. Barur means clear. So Nashkuvah means yearn for purity. Yeah. So what do the Christians do? They say, oh, this means, and they put in their translation, kiss, the S-O-N with a capital S. Because they say bar, you know, like bar mitzvah. But what they don't recognize is the fact that bar is Aramaic and it's not Hebrew. So what they do is they take the Aramaic, impose it on the Hebrew, and they say, look, it's talking about kissing, S-O-N. A real distortion of what the Tehillim is saying, yearn in purity. There's another interesting thing here, and that is with Hebrew grammar, when you have a verb followed by the definite article, a transitive verb, then you have the words S. Like, if I say, I eat an apple, ani ochel tapuach. But if I say, I eat the apple, then ani ochel es hatapuach. Ochel is what's called a transitive verb. An intransitive verb is like, I sleep. You don't sleep a something. So I eat a something, that's called transitive. So if you're going to say, nashkuvar means the sun, then it should be in Hebrew grammar, nashku es habar. But of course, they don't know about rules of grammar like that. If we move on into Yeshayah, Perek Zayin, Pasuk Yud Dalet, there's a very classic mistranslation which is famous, and that is, there, it's talking to the wife of Achoz, and there's the battle, it's the whole story recounted in the Haftarah of Parshas Yisro, the battle between the kingdoms, and there, it talks about, Hinei ho'almo horo v'yoledes bein. So there, it's all about almo, And what do the Christians do? They treat this word as the word as though it's basulo. A woman who's never been married. But Alma means a young woman. She could be married or not. And everywhere else in Tanakh where it talks about Alma, or Rivka was called Alma, they talk in their translation about a young woman. But just here, they say, oh, this is talking about the virgin birth. It's not talking, though, about basulo. And horror is in past tense. The word horror comes up 10 times in Tanakh. Has conceived a child. Not will conceive a child. And this is talking about the time of Achos, which is 600 years before Yeshua was born. Why in the middle of battles with Achos should they be thinking about some event which will happen in 600 years' time? And it's written in the past tense. But when you look at the Christian translation, they give it the future tense. She shall conceive. And if they don't want to sound so devious, they say conceives. They put it in the present tense. For 600 years later. And a similar one in Yeshayahu Tess. In Yeshayahu it says, Tess Posakei, Ki Yeled Yulad Lonu. Also in the Haftarah of Parshas Yisro. Ki Yeled Yulad Lonu. Yulad is past tense. It's not only past tense, it's past in the past. Pluperfect. Ki Yeled Yulad Lonu Bein Nitan Lonu. Past tense. It's talking about the birth of Chizkio, Melech Yehuda. So what do they say? Oh, this is talking about the birth of Yeshua. And if you look at their tenses, they say it's in the future. Sometimes they put it in the present. A rather amusing one comes up in Tehillim, in Chof Beis. In Chof Beis, there's a phrase which talks about the persecutions which the Jewish people have or will be suffering, and that the dogs are surrounding us. Ironically, it's really talking about all the suffering we've had over the ages caused by the Christians. The Crusades, the pogroms, the Inquisitions, and the Holocaust. So it talks about the dogs surrounding us. A pack of evildoers have enclosed me. So there it says, Ko'ari yodai v'ragloi, like the prey of the lion are my hands and feet. So my hands and feet are the prey of these evildoers that they are attacking us Jews. And like a lion, they go for us. So what do the Christians do with this word, ko'ari? They say, well, actually, the yud should really be a vav. They claim in the Dead Sea Scrolls it's really a vav. So they lengthen the yud into a vav, and they say, koru. And they say, koru means they pierced. They pierced my hands and feet. And they say, you see, Tehillim 22 is talking about the crucifixion. Chas v'shalom. But there's a few problems with this. First of all, there's no word in the Hebrew language, chof aleph resh vav, at all. There is a verb, chof resh vav, which is they dug with a spade. So when you dig with a spade, that's koru. But it doesn't mean they pierced. If you want to talk about pierced, then all you have to do is look in Parshas Mishpotim about piercing the ear of the Eved Ivri, and the word used is matzea. There are a number of words in Hebrew which can mean pierced. It could have said chodru, nokvu, they made a hole. Ritziu, dokru, but it says, according to them, koru, which means they dug with a spade. So they say, oh, that yud is a vav, the aleph is irrelevant, therefore it's koru. They dug, but it's not, they say it's pierced, and they say that is talking about the crucifixion. And of course, what about the rule of S? Remember the transitive verb and the S? If it would be, they pierced my hands and my feet, it should be koru esraglai, or esyodai v'esraglai. Of course there's no S, but Hebrew grammar for them goes out of the window. There's an interesting perek in Yeshayahu, Nun Gimel, what they call the suffering servant. It's talking about Klal Yisrael, Avdi is in singular, it's talking about the people of Israel who are suffering. So they say that this is their Yeshua. He's the suffering servant, they claim. But it's talking about Klal Yisrael. So what do the Christians say? They say, ah, yes, but if you look in the Alshich, in the commentary of the Alshich, that's how well learned they get, he says that the suffering servant is the Mashiach. All right, so what? So they claim that it's their Mashiach. Well, who says that that's him? It could be somebody else. And I'll tell you something more about the Alshich HaKadosh. If they want to quote the Alshich, then I'll tell you an amazing piece of Alshich which comes up in Parshas Shoftim. Ki polei mimchod avor lamishpot, vein dom ledom, vein din ledin, vein nega lo nega. It's talking about the powers of Chazal in teaching Torah, al pi ha-Torah shei yerucho. And there the Alshech says something really amazing. When Moshe Rabbeinu died, 300 halachas were forgotten. The people were crying. They were threatening Yehoshua physically. They were threatening to stone him, tell us what these halachas were. But he didn't know. There was a crisis in Klal Yisrael that these 300 halachas were forgotten. So Kalev got up and said, whoever can work out with Drosha these 300 halachas will merit my daughter in marriage. And it just so happened that Asniel, he sat down and with the Droshas available under the Yugimul Nidus, he managed to work out what these 300 halachas were. So the Al-Sheikh HaKadosh asks a very interesting question. Why couldn't Yehoshua ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Please Hashem, remind us what these halachas were. After all, they were talking to each other. Yehoshua and HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a dialogue. So why can't Yehoshua just say, Hashem, look, could you just let us know? Pick up the mobile phone, tell us what the 300 halachas are, and we've done the job, we've finished, solved the problem. No. Says the Al-Sheikh HaKadosh, that once Moshe Rabbeinu died, HaKadosh Baruch Hu never uttered a single word of halacha again. Torah Tziv Alonu Moshe, and that was it. No more. Hashem would never pronounce any halachas. After that, it was down to Chazal to interpret. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu would never say a single halacha after Moshe Rabbeinu. Why not? Says the Al-Sheikh HaKadosh. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew that in the future, there will be individuals who will come along and they will say, God appeared to me, he's given me a special message, it's all changed now, you have to listen to me. Ignoring that pasuk about Kiyokum Bekir Becho. That there will be people who come along, the Yeshuas will come along, the Muhammads will come along, and they will say, it's all changed now. Says the Al-Sheikh HaKadosh, Hashem deliberately kept quiet on halachas once Moshe Rabbeinu died, because nobody afterwards had the right to come along and say, God appeared to me. A very fundamental, interesting Al-Sheikh, which certainly goes against anything the Christians believe in about what the Al-Sheikh has said. There are numerous examples like this. If you go through the mistranslations, you will be bogged down with hundreds and hundreds of them, that they painstakingly went through our holy text and changed things just to suit their narrative. But I'd like to now just talk about another dialogue, which is brought in the Os HaVikuchim. It's a sefer brought out by Eisenstein in the 1920s with a collection of dialogues, mainly on the subject of the Christians and the rabbis talking to each other. And there he brings an interesting subject of Rav Yitzchok Lopez, who was discussing with a Christian the merits of the Jewish faith and arguing against Christianity. And the rabbi says to him, we are not allowed to change the Torah in any way. That is the way it's handed down to us. It is permanent and unchangeable. So what does the Christian say to him? He said, come on, you Jewish people, though, have been changing things, or will be changing things. Do not your Chazal say that the Chazir means return, because one day it will return to a kosher state. So the Chazar is not kosher, but it will be one day in the future. Therefore, the law will change. So the rabbi says to him, that's not what Chazal means. When the Torah says you may not eat Chazir, that's permanent law. What it does mean is that at the moment it's a hope. We don't know the reason for it. But in the future, the reason will come back to us. It will return to us. And we will understand once again why we're not allowed to eat it. So the Christian says, ah, yes, but your Chazal say, Osid libotel kol ha-modos. In the future, all your festivals will be done away with. Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, Chutz Mipurim, V'Yom HaKippurim, except for Purim and Yom Kippur. So there, you see, the laws have changed. Therefore, we Christians are allowed to change things. So the Rav says, that's not what Chazal mean. Pesach will always remain. Shavuos will always remain. Sukkot, Rosh Hashanah, they'll all remain. But what does it mean, osid libotel kolamodos? In the future, they will be nullified. He says the reasons for them will change. Because at the moment, we celebrate these chagim, zeichel etzias mitzrayim, and the miracles which HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us. But in the future, there will be even greater miracles happening. At the time of the Mashiach, when we are delivered, the miracles that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does will be so great, they will make Yetzias Mitzrayim look like nothing, look like child's play. So we will be celebrating in the future, Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, not simply Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim, but Zeichel Yemos HaMashiach. And that is why it says, Osid Libotel Kolamodos. But Purim and Yom Kippurim, they will stay the same reasons. Why? Because Purim is Kimu V'Kiblu, that we've accepted the Torah on ourselves willingly. And Yom HaKippurim will be Sulicha V'Chaparo, and that will remain the same. And therefore, nothing changes at all. No festivals will be stopped. So there you get an insight. And you may say to me, why bother with all this? Nobody here is going to start converting to Christianity. Fortunately, the Jews for J Place in Hendon Central has closed down, but they're active everywhere. But Dharma Lahoshiv, you should know how to answer. And apart from that, it gives us a very important feeling when we say the bracha, Asher Nosan Nonu Toras Emes, that every single word and letter of the Torah is Emes, in contrast to what they promote, that nothing at all is MS. So much so that when they teach their children the shakorim and falsehoods, they have to be Moshe Sheker ala Sheker. They have to say that the guy who brings them presents is bringing them down the chimney. Because they have to add Sheker to more Sheker in order to make themselves more convincing. That is an insight then as to what really happened on the 9th of Teves all those years ago. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.